Welcome to Kibitz and Bits, where we argue information security and draw lessons from the weekly Torah portion.
A Torah portion is the biblical reading in the Jewish scriptures for a given week. So we're clear, we're not Torah experts.
Nope, I maintain we're barely cybersecurity experts.
Well, I'm going to maintain we're cybersecurity experts in a pandemic and experts with opinions, and we're going to share them with you.
You are joining this weekly podcast in 2020 or 5780, depending on your point of view. And this is episode 43 for the week of August 9th. I'm Wolf, and by day, I'm an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
So Dave, what's this week's Torah portion?
So this week is Parshat in Deuteronomy is called Re'eh. That's spelled R-E apostrophe E-H. Re'eh. And we're reading Deuteronomy Re'eh 11:26 through 12:28 for triennial year one. And at this point, they are still at the River Jordan. Like, Moses has not let them cross yet. Continues to have them reflect on the things that they've learned from the past, but even more so in this case, saying, okay, well, now you also need to really focus on that, keeping your mind and your heart clean, and here, continue with the sacrifices, and if you do all these things, and God will take care of you, and you'll have abundance, and you'll grow, and you'll have more land, and you'll have more, flocks of animals, and crops will grow, and all these good things. But if you don't, you got nothing. So it's kind of, again, more warning. But there's one part that kind of stood out to me in 12:23, and I'll just read it really quick. It's pretty short. It says, but make sure that you do not partake of the blood. And the reference here is a part of butchering animals and preparing them and cooking them. So he's saying, make sure you do not partake of the blood, for the blood is the life, and you must not consume the life with the flesh. And those other parts that said how the blood needs to just kind of spill out like water. And this kind of had me thinking, like, okay, what is like the lifeblood of InfoSec? And it's a combination of two different things, right? So the blood is like the data, right? People want the data. That's the stuff that keeps people and corporations, government entities going. You have the data, you have information, you can do stuff with it. And then the life from an InfoSec standpoint to me is kind of like going back to like maybe CIA, more specifically with kind of the access of the data, the availability of it, right? Having access to that data would then mean you have the blood of the company. And what are you going to do with that blood? Should you consume it? Do you share it? Do you donate it? Do you sell it? What do you do? And it kind of reminded me a bit back when I was working, oh my God, we're going like 26 years? So you're going back almost 26 years ago when I was working for a company that manufactured a product that would collect email for SEC compliance, right? So that in the financial services, if somebody was sending an email, right, maybe like a broker trader or somebody, investment banker, you couldn't do like guaranteed earnings, insider trading, of course, but you or guaranteed rates or anything like that, right? You couldn't say like, yeah, this stock's going to make you a ton of money. Trust me, you can't make those kind of guarantees. And there was software that would have these lexicons that would go through this, and then it would go and do analysis on those emails in a way to like flag if an IB or a broker trader was trying to, lure customers or, dupe customers into doing business with them. And it's because that, the tool had full access to the email. And it made me, and the reason why I was thinking about it is like an email auditing, and this is just one function, right? You can audit anything. There was just so much access to that message when somebody actually was considered a suspect. At that point, there was no evidence required to really do any of that monitoring. It was all just, random sampling. But then if someone's like, hey, we know you're doing something, rather than just point the finger and hope to collect the data and they try to destroy it, they actually began like 100% monitoring on that individual. and in case it was more evidence. So I just kind of feel like in our field, we have so much access to data, and it's kind of like we need to monitor that data to protect the entity, to protect the corporation, the organization, whatever it might be. And there are people that argue against that. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I love that story, because as a security officer in a money management firm, I had to do similar email archiving for the SEC. And this is the one that always freaked me out. We deployed VoIP, and in deploying VoIP, we had to degrade the security of the VoIP network so that we could capture phone calls for specific targeted individuals. Basically, the SEC said, if thou are doing this, thou shalt record all your messages for quality assurances purposes, I'm sure. But that always concerned me, right? Because now anyone with enough knowledge and enough access can tap into the VoIP network and basically listen in on any conversation. I definitely agree that there is some risk about access and how access gets used. There's a story at the time we're recording this about a pretty major company. I'm not going to name the name. But their chief executives are being brought up on charges because they leveraged, it's a tech company, it's a SaaS company, they leveraged their access in the SaaS company to view data and effectively stalk people. So I can see the parallel you're drawing there. You know, data is the lifeblood, access to that data is the lifeblood, but don't consume it, right? Don't do anything more with that data as a IT or IT security professional than you are charged with doing.
Well, you kind of reminded me of a time when I worked at a company that made a product doing the VoIP collection and monitoring. It was LIMS was the acronym, Lawful Intercept Monitoring System. And there was a group where they were kind of like, and that one was like, I mean, 1 year they saw like 1,000% growth. It was like amazing. But the thing is, like, I was like kind of interested in one of my like to join that team because they're doing so well. And it just seemed like, you know, again, I'm like into the monitoring part. And one of the guys on my team's like, no, you want nothing to do with that business because you might have like the FBI showing up at your doorstep one day just because you know how the tool works. And that scared me enough. So I think here in the example that you're providing too, it's good. I like it, but you know, who's monitoring the monitors, right? At what point can these things be abused? You provided an example that's current events where they had just way too much access and there was abuse of power. But what was the checks and balances monitoring them, right? Were there, you know, I always kind of think of that tool Tripwire. Even if they're still around, I don't know, right? It's always like, as soon as that host file is edited, you know about it. And then, you know, it could like roll it back. I mean, it was like really great tech. But, you know, that kind of thing is what we need across the board, always monitoring for the changes that could be unauthorized, even potentially authorized if it's within like a boundary of information, like, you know, you do bounds checking. But then the other one was, what about just reading the data? You know, people, like, why are you reading this? You don't need to be reading this directly. You shouldn't have to. You know, where's the monitors for that and in a way to protect the company?
Tripwire is a great example. Yeah, they're still around. I actually, I did some videos with them in February of this year. But it brings up an interesting point. So I used to run Tripwire on my mainframe environment, my AIX heavy metal equipment or heavy iron equipment. And the challenge there was I got so many false alerts. And I think that is also the challenge we get with data collection, right? We need to collect data and monitor. Why? So that we can make sure that people are doing the right things. But at the same time, it's imperative that we protect people's privacy and we protect people's, dignity, which is something that can be forgotten all too easily in the tech world. And at the same time, furthermore, we need to recognize that the technologists who are running these tools won't always have the discipline to not look at those logs. So oftentimes that means we need to take an alert model where we're running a pattern or doing a search for certain concerns or suspected fraud or insider threat. And then we raise the alert. But if we do that, then what do we have? Then what we have is contributing to alert fatigue. And I probably mentioned this previously on this podcast, but I mean, mid-sized companies are seeing 10,000 alerts a day.
Wow. I thought you were just talking about, you've mentioned alert fatigue because we both mentioned that, but 10,000 a day, like what do you do with that?
Right click delete.
I literally was talking to a customer yesterday where he had a consulting company go through and do a scan, and they came back with, I think it was something like 148,000 vulnerabilities. And he's like, I can't even process this. This is, by the time we're done processing it, it's going to be another new 148,000. And this was like different boxes that needed patching, but it wound up that the tool would look at an IP and then count these things multiple times for some reason. So there was a lot of estimation.
Yeah, that's very common with unauthenticated scans because you're not authenticated into the box, you have no way of knowing if the vulnerability you're finding in three different ports is three different vulnerabilities or one software package contributing to all three. So that is something that happens all the time. The other thing that happens, I was with a managed service provider, and again, not going to name names because what I may say may concern people. But they would get to as many alerts as they could in a given day, given their staff, and then they would right-click and acknowledge all the rest. And the way this was explained to customers is we're doing 24/7 monitoring, and we're doing a deep dive on the most suspect or most suspicious alerts. In reality, that meant they scroll through anything that looks interesting, they look at, and the rest of them they just acknowledge without digging into.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into, we need better rules, right? We need better rules for detection. We need not to just rely on a person. We know that sometimes computers make mistakes and you need a human to kind of do the gut check. But at the same time, when you're scrolling through that many alerts, you're going to be missing stuff. Something could be very, very subtle. And the human that's not properly trained to pick up on that subtlety will just be like, yeah, that's fine. Meanwhile, it's absolutely not. So... Mm-hmm. You know, what do we go there? And, you know, folks have heard me say it before, do we go with AI ML? Is there ways to create small algorithms to say, okay, you know, we see this alert, that generally means nothing, but within a certain time period before or after, we saw a different kind of alert or behavior, and we know in conjunction that's some kind of attack. And so now we're not going to just raise the alert. Maybe we'll do something like a warning, right? Here's something that says, okay, we have a warning here. And then there was some other behavior after that. Like, oh, wait, now we've seen three things together. We're pretty sure that this needs to be addressed right away. That's the idea ideal scenario everybody's trying to get to. It just seems like it's really, really taken a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many different scenarios. But I agree with you. Good application of algorithms, correlation, good rule matching, good use of data mining. All that is going to improve things. I also think back to data is the blood of the organization. We need to do some anonymization of that data to protect people from themselves in terms of our IT and SOC professionals, and to protect people's privacy in terms of our workforce. There was a UEBA demo I sat in on a while ago, maybe I think it was towards the end of last year. And what I thought was fascinating was the full data set was available to the analyst. However, the full data set was anonymized and not revealed to the analyst until there was an alert. And then based on that alert, you could dig in, you could investigate, you could pull up information. So in other words, the idea of, oh, we know that Jane is on her computer, you know, on these on work hours going to these sites, or John's on his computer and on work hours going to these other illicit sites he's not supposed to. Therefore, we're going to, you know, call them out or use this information. You would never have that. You would know that a computer got infected, and through the investigation of that computer being infected, you might get to the point where you can view Jane or John's browser history or information, but that information is not available to the analyst unless it's directly tied to an alert and unless it's directly tied to an investigation.
That, I think that's a pretty good approach. It does control a lot of data spray where privacy information could be included in a log or an alert because, you know, it's just easier. I do like that anonymization. There's still the risk of whoever's doing that investigation, when they're doing the deeper dive on that machine, they can still access sensitive information. It's funny how you mentioned like UEBA, and I may have mentioned this before, when I've done audits of data, even in the cloud, when we're just looking for SSNs or any PII, nearly invariably, I found people's personal tax returns. And then I'm like, oh, do I want to read this? But then it's like, no, it's their personal information. I really don't want to read this. But because it came up in alert, I have to, because I can't dismiss it. Why is this here? Because is the alert faulty? Is the algorithm that's detecting it faulty, right? Monitor the monitors, right? What are the, we need better rules. And it wasn't. It was an address. It was phone numbers. And it's just like, people, stop putting your personal tax returns up in OneDrive and SharePoint. It doesn't belong there.
And I want to add one more thing to that, back to thinking about the people themselves. It's incredibly important when we talk about these monitoring tools, these monitoring programs, that we give guidance to folks on what to do. But that we don't be creepy. I mean, the risk is future crimes, right? The risk is Minority Report. I noticed you did these three things, and therefore, I'm going to fire you before you become a insider threat. You know, depending on how you look at it, we're already on the precipice of a cyber dystopia. So let's not push us over the edge by enriching the data too far. I think at the point in which we are collecting information, monitoring the workforce, and at the point in which we're collecting information and monitoring the SOC professionals and analysts who are looking at the information for the workforce, at both of those points, it is incredibly important that we protect people's dignity.
I think that was a really good wrap up. Thanks, Wolf. and so folks, again, you know, if you're out there and you have full access to data, always, always do the ethics check, right? Just because you have access doesn't mean you should go and even read anything. Deploy the monitoring tools, make sure they're well-tuned, do the checks and balance on one another also, but don't let anyone take advantage and steal the blood of the company, right? Because then that affects your life. Oh, you like how I did that metaphor? So, folks, this has been Kibitz and Bits with Wolf and Dave. Stay tuned and listen to the sponsor message, please. The sponsor message does help cover the cost of this podcast, and any proceeds will go to a charity of our choice. And if you have an argument either way for Wolf's argument, my argument, or something we haven't thought of, please leave a message in the Anchor app. We'll play it back in a future podcast and comment on it. So, folks, stay healthy, everyone. Question truth. And be better.